Very good morning to you. How you doing? Sunday morning it is, July the 26th, 2020. Not a bad morning here in Salford in Greater Manchester in the Northwest. Sunday View it is with me, Richie Allen, the usual, the newspapers. And we'll hear from the protagonists, some of those mentioned in the newspapers as well. And you can join me, of course, through social media, tweet your comments and your thoughts along the way. Thanks again for waking up to this programme.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, and I've just opened Twitter this minute. I just remembered to do it, so if you do tweet me, I will get to read them. How's your own weekend gone? Has it been okay thus far? Big day for football fans in the country. I won't get into too much of that, don't worry. We ain't a sports programme here. But a big day for football fans, including Salford football fans. Big Manchester United contingent, of course, in Salford, eagerly anticipating the final day of the Premier League season. The prolonged season, of course, because of the lockdown. Yeah, enough of that. Of course, I'm not going to get into too much of that. Let me just open up one or two websites. I accidentally knocked off my browser as I was just about to open the programme there. Ah, it's back now. It's all good. Can't complain. Right then. Overcast this morning. I hope that isn't an omen for this afternoon's football, all to play for. Enough of that. Went for a drive in a park yesterday with the three women. Lovely to get out and spend a bit of time in the open air. Nice to see lots of people out as well. A lot of people out and about with their dogs and their children. Went to a beer garden. No beer for me though, because I'm off it and I plan on staying off it. Glass of water. I wouldn't drink and drive anyway. I think the most in recent years I've ever done is have a half of ale. But I didn't even do that. I had a glass of water and felt all the better for it. What's that? Oh, yeah. That's the tail end of my theme tune there. Right, before we get into the newspapers, as has become the custom, I need some water. Let me grab some water there. A frog in my throat. Yeah. This doesn't bode well for the rest of the programme. Right. As has become the custom on Sunday View, before we look at the front pages of the newspapers, let's have a tune. All right. Okay. And I'll drink more water. Welcome to Sunday View, live from Salford. The time, 3 minutes past 11. This is the Boo Radleys. And I am the BBG. Headlines next, and then lots more to talk about as well on Sunday View. Right, let's rush through the headlines then. Welcome back to the programme. Hi to Fabrizio, who says, give a mention to Tim Smith of Cardiacs, who passed last Wednesday. I just did, Fabrizio. Good luck. Hi to Bass Ninja. Hi to Charlotte in Burnley. Right, let's move on very quickly. Let's rush through the headlines. Quarantine dominates the headlines this morning. Sunday Telegraph. Tourists must quarantine on return home from Spain. 2 weeks it is. Sunday Mirror. Costa del quarantine. Yes, Sunday Express. Virus brings new holiday misery. That's the front of the Sunday Express. The Sunday Times goes with the royal family. William behaved like a snob when Harry fell for Meghan is the headline. But also on the front page of the Sunday Times, I told you regularly and most recently on Friday, vaccine sceptics are in the crosshairs. I did tell you that, didn't I? On the front page of the Sunday Times this morning, headline, Google profits from anti-vaxxers. We will return to that one. So royal family and anti-vaxxers on the front page of the Sunday Times. The Mail on Sunday, just like the Times, the Royals feature. Kate, we rolled out red carpet for her. Her means Meghan. On to the Observer. Front page, anti-Semitism is the story. Labour warns of cash crisis as anti-Semitism cases grow. Allegedly, there are 9 other potential cases where Labour will be sued over its failure to properly handle allegations of anti-Semitism. And we might get into that if there's time later, but I don't think we will have time. Sunday People, headline is, I'll be out one day. One of the teenagers convicted last week of the manslaughter of PC Andrew Harper has insisted that he will be out one day. Well, as he is 18 now, there's a good chance he will be out one day. Right. Star on Sunday, the headline is, Eddie's ghost talks to me. This is about Sid Little, one half of the very popular comedy duo Little and Large, big in the 1980s. Eddie Large, of course, passed away not so long ago, and Sid Little has been telling the Star on Sunday that he is visited by the ghost of Eddie Large. Hey, well, he might be. It was the 1980s, Little and Large, French and Saunders, Cannon and Ball, God be with the days. Yeah. When Saturday evening meant telly, lots of telly, when Irish people didn't go out on Saturday evening, they went out on Sundays, Sunday afternoon, Sunday night, they stayed in for HTV or ITV. HTV it was in Waterford, where we got the Generation Game and we got 3-2-1 with Ted Rogers. Oh, be Jesus, yeah. Catchphrase with Roy Walker, yeah. That was more 90s. And of course, the aforementioned Cannon and Ball, yeah. Sale of the Century, yeah. Right, okay, move on, Paulie. Sun on Sunday, the headline is L Hell. What's going on? Well, it was announced last night the travellers arriving in the UK from Spain must now quarantine themselves for 2 weeks. New coronavirus travel rules. Why was this announced? Well, there was a spike in coronavirus cases in Spain, apparently. More than 900 new cases of the virus reported on Friday. Spanish officials warning a second wave could be imminent. Major cities seeing cases surge. Airlines, including British Airways, have criticised the new measures as yet another blow to British holidaymakers. The Foreign Secretary, Dominic Raab, was on Sky News this morning with Sophie Ridge, who asked him this.
Why was the decision taken with so little notice?
Well,
good question, Sophie.
As the cases in Spain, the data we got was on the Friday. You obviously compile that through the course of the day. It showed a big jump right across mainland Spain. That was then assessed yesterday afternoon, and we took the decision as swiftly as we could. And look, we can't make apologies for doing so. We must be able to take swift, decisive action, particularly in relation to localised or internationally in relation to Spain, a particular country, where we see we must take action. Otherwise, we risk reinfection into the UK, potentially a second wave here, and then another lockdown. So, yes, I understand it is disruptive for those who are going through this, who are in Spain or who've been considering going to Spain. We must be able to take swift, decisive action to protect the UK because we've made such progress getting the virus down and to prevent the virus retaking hold in the UK.
I don't think anyone would debate the need to take fast action, swift action on this. But at the same time...
Well, that's your fucking job, Blondie. That's your job to debate whether or not it's the appropriate action, not just to nod along. Do your job, love. Ask him. You've got the industry this morning coming out screaming about job losses. It's going to cost people, you know, their livelihoods in great numbers. At least make some fist of having a go at him, love. I mean, this is absolute crap from a presenter, isn't it?
Decisive action to protect the UK because we've made such progress getting the virus down and to prevent the virus retaking hold in the UK.
Right. I don't think anyone would debate the need to take fast action, swift.
I don't think anyone would debate the need, but that's your job, you wench. You absolutely crap, useless, lost with all hands muppet. You shouldn't be there if you're not prepared to debate with him. At the very least, anyway. Raab goes on to say, we have to take decisive action, and we reserve the right, when we feel like it, to tell you all to get back indoors. Get indoors now. Why? Well, the virus is back. All right, then. We'll get indoors. She then asks them about a traffic light system for holidays. Why not? Akin to the terror alert system. Shite. Let's have a traffic light system where... If we're thinking about booking a holiday, I don't know, to Amsterdam or Copenhagen, before we would do that, we would look at the traffic lights. Fancy a weekend in Amsterdam, love? I'll get the neighbours to mind the dogs. We'll shag like rabbits for 2 nights, get pissed right up, and have a generally good time. I don't know, Rich. What's the traffic light say? Well, it's amber. I don't know what that means. She asks them about traffic lights. Yeah.
But I think above all, people that are travelling or considering travelling need certainty and clarity. And the flip side of that is, of course, we need to take those decisions
swiftly. You could use an alert system, you know, red, amber, green, couldn't you?
Well, I think with amber, what would we be actually saying? People want to know whether they can go, whether they should go, whether they shouldn't.
Well, with the amber, if the amber light is flashing, I don't know, you can kind of go, but, you know, it's like when you're stuck at the traffic lights. Do you gun the accelerator when you see it go from red to amber, like the dickhead boy racers? Or do you drive like Miss Daisy, like me, and you wait till it's green for 3 seconds? So you don't get smashed in a cross car coming across you. It just deserves to be mocked, this, doesn't it? You know, traffic light systems, eh?
Shouldn't. And the system that we've had in place, and we've had various crises we've had to deal with before, is tailored to be able to give people clear and decisive advice. Of course, and I just want to come back and say it, Sophie, if we can't take these targeted measures, we've had to take them in relation to Leicester at home, we've had to take them in relation to holiday and travel to Spain. If we can't do that, and we've always said, as we come through the lockdown and come out...
They just want us living totally on edge and totally jittery. That's what they're doing. They want you to live with a permanent case of the jitters. I was thinking, listening to them this morning, I was thinking of the lyrics to Lanigan's Ball. Remember Lanigan's Ball? And I stepped out and I stepped in again. We stepped out and then we stepped back in again and the virus was there, so we all went back in again and Lanigan's feckin' ball. You can go. Oh, you can't go. Hang on. We're opening gyms again. Oh, hang on. We can't open gyms now. But I was just about to put my bandana on. I was about to get physical on my fucking headphones and start running on the treadmill. No. There were 3 cases in the city yesterday. We just found out you've got to leave the gym. This is how it's going to be in the future. It's just funny. It's funny to see people just say, yeah, if the government says it, yeah. Hey, listen, if you're going to Spain or if you've already booked for Spain, you might be wondering what the hell is going on. At least Sophie, at least she asked that much.
Now, if you have got a holiday booked in Spain in the next couple of weeks, lots of people will have.
Yeah.
Are you going to get your money back?
Good question. Are you going to get your moolah back?
Well, the way it works is that the insurance companies respond to the changes in travel advice. We've upped holidaymakers to get in touch with their insurance companies, but we're very clear now that we advise against travel to mainland Spain.
Okay.
Yeah, you've got weeks and weeks and weeks of dicking around with insurance companies. Try and get some money back from Ryanair after a flight's been cancelled. And they bullshit you around for weeks, offering you vouchers and all this sort of shit, even though they are compelled by law to give you your money back immediately. But they play the lottery. They play the odds of offering you vouchers that you might eventually just get fed up and just lose interest. That's what happens. So if you have booked for Spain and that holiday is going to be cancelled, you need to get straight into it. Bombard them with emails, ring them, threaten them, harass them. That's the way to get your cash back. Yeah. Now, what about the shadow health secretary, Jonathan Ashworth, Labour Party frontbencher? What does he reckon to the decision to close, basically to close off travel to Spain and to quarantine everybody coming back from Spain for 2 weeks? Shadow health secretary, John Ashworth.
Well, I can understand why the government have made this decision, and it's a reminder that we can't be complacent about this virus. It does seem to be on the increase in some countries across Europe, including Spain. It's certainly accelerating in certain countries across the world. And, of course, one of the big blunders from Boris Johnson was back in March was not quarantining those coming from Spain and France and Italy, because that's how the virus was seeded. So I understand why they've made the decision. But, of course, the way in which this decision has been made in the last 24 hours is, frankly, shambolic. There are holidaymakers in Spain at the moment, confused and distressed. There are people about to go on holiday to Spain and the islands like Tenerife who are confused. And they don't know whether their employers will allow them to take 2 weeks quarantine. The government just say, oh, we hope that employers cooperate. Well, you know, to be frank, I hope that I'll win the lottery on Saturday. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. We need clarity from government now as to whether those who are asked to quarantine, whether they'll get financial support if their employers refuse it them. And we need clarity around clarity for those holidaymakers who are currently in Spain, who have probably saved up all year for their family holiday, who are confused and distressed. And this is probably the way in which this decision has been communicated is obviously causing anxiety.
Yeah, he's another useless piece. Well, I'm not going to get into it. Jonathan Ashworth there. Funny he mentioned playing the lottery. I want to win the lottery on Saturday. You know, nothing to see here. Camelot, which runs the lottery here in the UK, has been caught with its trousers down, using money that is meant to go to charities to help advertise new games. Misspending funds that it's meant to allocate to charities in the country. Not a peep about it, though, on UK television news this morning. Right, to the Sunday Times story on anti-vaxxers. This is important because we're seeing so much of it now, aren't we? We're seeing so much talk and so much commentary in UK and world media about the need to deal with people that they call anti-vaxxers, which is very disingenuous because many people are not anti-anything. They are pro-safe medication and medication that can be demonstrated quite easily to be safe because of rigorous and robust testing regimes, which of course doesn't apply to vaccines. They don't test them. Well, They do small, not small, but they do some testing, as I said on Friday, in third world countries where they use their money and their brown envelopes to get the results they want. Basically, they lie while injuring people. This is what they do. So they're going after people asking questions. Andrew Gregory in the Sunday Times. The headline is Google Profits from Anti-Vaxxers. He's the health editor of the Sunday Times. Five companies have pulled online adverts after a Sunday Times investigation found Google placed them on websites spreading dangerous nonsense about vaccines and the coronavirus. You get that? So these companies found out that their ads or ads for their products ended up on websites where people questioned the safety and the efficacy of vaccines. The companies are Currys PC World, JD Sports, Sotheby's, Jigsaw and Accenture. They ordered Google to remove their ads from websites promoting false claims that vaccines cause autism and that people who have a COVID-19 vaccine will have a tracking chip implanted in them. Google was accepting web pages that violate its policies and as a result was earning millions of pounds in revenue via its digital advertising platform, which Google takes about 30% of the money from. The World Health Organization has already warned that misinformation is a major threat to global health amid an alarming surge in anti-vaccination sentiment fueled by false claims spread online. One in four Britons, as we spoke about last week, say they may refuse a COVID-19 vaccine even if one proves safe and effective. Yes. And listen to this. This guy, Imran Ahmed, the chief executive of the Centre for Countering Digital Hate. What the feck does Imran Ahmed know about the price of beans? Let alone know about epidemiology and vaccine safety. The answer is nothing. And what the fuck is the Centre for Countering Digital Hate? What is digital hate anyway? It's madness, this. This arsehole is saying websites were likely just a small proportion of those profiting from medical misinformation. This is about the forthcoming cull, which I've been talking about. The cull of independent content creators and independent commentators, many of whom who have worked and do work in medicine, who question the lunacy of rushing a vaccine to the table over a virus that is gone now, mostly has come and gone, and you've got a guy from the Centre for countering digital hate being quoted in the Sunday Times. What does he know about it? Nothing. Nothing. These are dangerous times. Let's have a listen to Anne Diamond. Wait, for before we hear Anne Diamond and Michael Booker, he's obviously Sunday Express. Anne Diamond is a Sky News newspaper reviewer and a former television presenter. This guy from the Centre for Countering Digital Hate, let me finish the quote, right? He says, placing adverts for household name brands next to false and misleading stories, how does he know, helps to legitimise dangerous nonsense, while the money these brands inadvertently pay helps fake news websites spread their poison. He said that it helps fake news websites spread their poison. Spreading poison. The irony of that, of course, I won't dwell on that. Imran Ahmed, who wouldn't know the first thing about vaccine safety or vaccines. Anne Diamond, Michael Booker from the Sunday Express, speaking on Sky News this morning about this very story and the danger of misinformation in the digital age.
As if we haven't got enough on our plate. And while the rest of us are praying for a vaccine against COVID-19.
Praying for a vaccine. Are you praying for a vaccine?
As soon as possible. There is this growing number of anti-vaxxers spreading myths and misinformation. And five companies, it says in this story, five major UK companies have pulled their online adverts when they found that Google was putting their adverts on websites spreading these sort of dangerous stories about vaccines and the coronavirus. Do you know, there's even one conspiracy theory that says that if we ever get a proper vaccine for COVID-19, when you get the vaccination, you'll have a tracking device put in you.
Yes, Anne, yes. And although the COVID vaccine might not contain such a thing, there is a patent, Anne. Did you bother your lazy, hairy hole to even look it up, did you? Did you even go looking for it? Because even if you totally disbelieve it and you go online and use any search engine and look for patents or just look for tracking chips and vaccines, you will find the patents, Anne. You lazy arse. You big lazy arse, Anne.
And while it sounds stupid and extraordinary,
but it isn't, because there's a patent for it.
Apparently, there is this growing number of websites that are gaining something like, I think it says 500 million visits a year. So people are reading this and some are believing it. And no wonder major companies are pulling their adverts, because they shouldn't have been put there in the first place.
Ah, shut up, Anne.
Why is it that there's so many people want to really believe these conspiracy theories? What do you
A good question. That's the host. Well, why are hundreds and hundreds of millions of people now turning to the independent media? Again, the irony, you could choke on it. Because you, Stephen Dixon, are a fucking whore for the establishment. And most people can see that now. So they're looking for information elsewhere. You don't have to be Alfred Einstein to figure that one out.
Mickey.
And this is Michael Booker, Sunday Express.
Well, I've got a bit of a theory about it's been helped in a way by lockdown. I think a lot of people have been stuck in the home for so long, just sat with the same circle of people.
And knowing deep down inside yourself that something is very wrong with the lockdown itself, Michael. It's not because they're bored at home because of the lockdown. It's because on some level they know that this lockdown is tyrannical. So they've begun to go, look, and I know this. Our live listening figures are up by 14%, I think it is, since March. This particular programme, not Sunday View, but the Richie Allen radio show live, Monday to Thursday, 5 o'clock, there's the ad, is up 14%. It's not because people are bored, it's because people are scared. And they know they are being lied to.
People sat with maybe some, you've got younger people who you spend a lot more time with among your families, who are getting their news from different sources, not so much sources like TV news or from newspapers, and they're looking on the internet, and more people are seeing this. And I've had this over the last few weeks where people who are generally normally fairly sensible people are actually floating these ideas that they've seen on these websites and asking you, do you think they are true? So I don't know.
What do are you saying, Michael? Because again, just like the dickhead from the Centre for Countering Digital Hate, you know about as much about epidemiology, virology and vaccines as I do about, astrophysics. So what do you tell them? Do you say it's nonsense? And if you do, what are you basing it on? You're a journalist, man. Do your job. You know, ask a few questions. Start digging into it a bit more before telling your friends that it's all nonsense.
No, I think there is a little bit to be said. It's a symptom. We've all just been sitting around just reading lots of different things.
No bad thing.
Places where we don't really normally read. And it's having an effect.
Yeah, hopefully it's having a good effect.
It is worrying. Now, to the Sunday Telegraph.
It is worrying. Says the helpful presenter. Anne Diamond says that she's praying for a vaccine. Can you believe that? Praying for it. Here's a prayer for Anne Diamond. And now I lay me down to sleep. I pray to God for all the sheep, that they listen now for heaven's sake, and not be compelled a vaccine to take. Eh? On the spot that. No, I had to think about it. I was up all night. I am the BBG, the Big Baldy Gammon, Richie Allen, live from Salford, Sunday morning, July 26th. And this is Baccarat, back to the 1970s. More from the papers and the mid-morning talk shows after this tune. Welcome to Sunday View. There ain't nothing like it, right? 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 Baccarat, yes, sir, I can boogie on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Good morning to Debbie Griffiths. Good morning, Debbie. I love you too, Debbie. Thanks for listening. Nice to be with you this Sunday morning, and it's a nice morning. Final day, Premier League. Shut up, Paulie. All right. I have to restrain myself every Sunday not to spend a few minutes talking about the beautiful game. No, I won't get into that. Don't get into that. Listen, before we go anywhere, let me do this. When we come back, going to talk about Camilla Long. She is a writer for the Sunday Times. Very interesting piece in today's Sunday Times about cancel culture. We'll do that when I come back in 60 seconds time.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Now, welcome back to the programme. Hi, Charlotte, again. Charlotte said she went to a convenience store yesterday. There were four other people in there without a mask on. Charlotte didn't wear a mask. The shopkeeper didn't say a word. He better not, Charlotte. Eh? Or she. Yeah, yes, you misogynist. Yes, sexist bastard. He or she better not. You'll take your business elsewhere. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Right. Oh, let's move on. Camilla Long. This could take a while. I don't want it to because there's lots to get through. But she's written about cancel culture in her opinion piece in today's Sunday Times. The headline assigned to her opinion piece is this: "Oh, Twitter, you don't have the skills or the guts to promote debate, so you stifle it." So I'm going to read you just little bits of it because it's a long piece. She writes, does Camilla. "So it was the knock on the door for me last Monday after 48 hours of slashing hell on social media. It's funny how, even after 11 years on Twitter, I never thought I'd get marched off the sites. You spend decades creeping around, hoping to avoid the gun at the back of your neck. One day you feel it, and it's only moments before you're disappeared." This is what happens. Happened even. She writes, "On Sunday last, I'd tweeted out this column, as usual, adding a spicy note about the chaos around face masks. There is zero clear evidence on the effectiveness of masks I wrote, "The government has said we don't need to wear them. Now we're told we must. And so the shops fall silent. Our high streets die. All this is devastating for human relations." This was my column on mask Nazism. I added, using the sub-editor's phrase from the headline. Looking back, I find it almost comical that I didn't actually write it myself. The thrust of my argument was this. Look, the evidence is unroadworthy. Where are things heading? And there were many people saying the same thing, and still are. What I didn't realise was how many more very, very angry people there were on the hunt for anyone they thought might be coming anywhere near saying the unsayable about face coverings. It makes good copy, but I don't enjoy the experience of being killed by 50,000 eggs. Makes you feel like the wrong sort of person. By mid-morning, Camilla Long and Nazism was top trending on Twitter. There were people writing blogs comparing me to Adolf Hitler. The Auschwitz Museum broke off from posting pictures of the dead to tell me I needed to educate myself on the development of Nazism. I thought someone must be bored in the press office. Norman Finkelstein, of course, would love that. The Auschwitz Museum, the Holocaust industry, of course. Big business. The cheek of the Holocaust, the Auschwitz Museum. Telling her to educate herself on the development of Nazism. Anyway, she goes on to say, Twitter took my column down. Yes, that actually happened. Never mind, the column had been printed in a paper nearly 200 years old. It, Twitter, 14 years old, knew better. On Monday, I received an email saying it had removed my tweet because it could incite widespread panic, social unrest or large-scale disorder. Thanks to my views on COVID. Imagine that. Twitter took the column down, emailed her, saying that it's dangerous and could cause widespread panic, social unrest, large-scale disorder. Ironically, writes Camilla Long, the email provided a link to the World Health Organization so that I could educate myself, again, out of ignorance. But the most obvious advice on that site seemed to be that the widespread use of masks everywhere is not supported by high-quality scientific evidence. This is the fuckery that we talk about. Twitter says to her, we're taking your tweet down. The tweet that links to your Sunday Times article where you question the necessity of face masks. And, says Twitter, here's a link to a World Health Organization story about face masks. And ironically, the WHO story actually says that face masks are, well, they're not much use at all. She kept emailing Twitter. She kept getting bland responses back. The tweet never went back up. Mad times. Mad times. And in the Sunday Times today, there's a story about 10 schools in the UK, 10 that we know of, telling pupils, when you come back to school in September, you should wear face masks. Here's the Mail on Sunday headline. Schools are flouting official guidance by requiring pupils to wear face masks when they return in September. The Mail on Sunday has learned. Yes. Flouting official guidance. Because children, not only do they not get it, but they don't give it to anybody. This is a fact. Schools flouting official guidance requiring pupils to wear the masks when they come back in September. While most head teachers are following government advice that masks are unnecessary and could actually increase transmission of COVID through misuse, at least 10 schools have broken ranks to make the coverings either compulsory or strongly encouraged. One comprehensive Holmes Chapel in Cheshire has even told parents the masks are now part of the school uniform. The masks are now part of the school uniform, and you can buy them for £3.
What kind of fuckery is this?
It's a bit of enterprising by the school. That's what fuckery it is, Amy. Yes, we can buy them for £1.12 and sell them to the parents for £3 when we tell them they're compulsory. Mad times. Oh, mad times. Very interesting court case going on in federal court in Idaho. Those of you who are interested in identity politics and in gender politics, prick your ears up right now. House Bill 500 in Idaho, or the Fairness in Women's Sports Act, which bans transgender girls and women from playing on female high school and college sports teams. Too right. Well, that law is being challenged by the American Civil Liberties Union of Idaho and a pressure group called Legal Voice. They're suing to overturn the law to allow transgender girls, boys basically, who believe they are girls, to play on the girls' teams. One of the plaintiffs is a trans woman at a university. She's upset at being excluded from sports. You might have picked up last week that it was announced last week that trans girls will not be allowed to play rugby on girls' rugby teams, lest they fucking kill the girls that they are competing with, right? It makes perfect sense to me, but not to the trans fascists who say, if I want to play on a girls' team, if I'm a girl, if I say I'm a girl, I shall be allowed to play. If I want to scrum down, if I want to scrum down with some girls, if I change my name to Natalie, I should be allowed to do so. So this is going on in Idaho. It's an interesting case, and we will watch it very closely. I bet you Usain Bolt, I bet you Usain Bolt is watching this really, really, really closely. Why do you say that, Baldy? Well, because we should have had the Olympics by now. In Japan, was it this year? Tokyo? I'm not sure. I think it might be Tokyo. And we're not having it because of the pandemic. A lot of people are very happy about that. The Olympics is probably the lowest common denominator, even for a sports fan. You have to be desperate to watch the Olympics. Those of us that love foosball, football, rugby league like me, bit of tennis every now and then, bit of rugby union every now and then. The Olympics is basically, it's just desperation in the summer. You've got nothing else to watch. And every fucking time you turn on the Olympics in the summer, it doesn't matter what time of day, somebody is swimming. Now, I know there are 300 different events in the Olympics. How is it that every 4 years, it could be a Tuesday, in the middle of the 17, 16 days, whatever it is, could be a Tuesday, could be 20 past three, you could have walked the dogs, come back, flick over BBC One, there's somebody fucking swimming. It's always swimming, isn't it? The most boring sport on God's green earth. Swimming. Anyway, but Usain Bolt has been talking about the fact there's no Olympics. And he won lots of Olympic sprint medals, did Usain Bolt. Lots of them. And he was given an interview to, I think, Gabby Roslin from the BBC. And he was lamenting the fact, you know, that when it comes around now, the Olympics is, well, it brings back a lot of memories. And he kind of wishes that he could have those days again. Well, you can, Usain. Be patient, man. Be patient. Pretty soon you'll be able to identify as Ursula Bolt. As Ursula Bolt. And win a couple more Olympic gold medals racing with the women. Whip them bitches, Ursula. Whip them. That's not going to happen, of course, but there you are. Right, let's move on. Some other stories. Ursula Bolt lining up in the women's 100 metre final. Smash those women. Yes, right. Okay, you're not funny. I know I'm not funny. I'm well aware of it. Let's have a look. Lovely story in The Observer today. Jean Ann will love this. Ursula Bolt. Go on, love. Go on, love. What a package she has. Ursula Bolt. Right, in The Observer this morning, Ireland offers 100,000 welcomes. Big kid, Mila Falcher wrote Fraulein. You get 100,000 welcomes unless you're a Yank. Amazingly, some restaurants and B&Bs in Ireland won't accept bookings from Yankee Doodle Dandies. If you're an American, they won't let you in. Because of the way Donald is handling the COVID crisis. It's beautiful, this. There isn't a day. A day doesn't go by that something doesn't make me laugh out loud. This is Rory Carroll in Dublin. Couldn't get any more Irish. Rory Carroll. Ireland has long greeted American tourists with open arms and the Irish salutation, Cead Míle Fáilte. An especially warm welcome awaits visitors who are big spenders and descendants of the diaspora. But that was before COVID turned everything upside down and Americans became objects of suspicion. And because America has had 4 million cases of COVID, some restaurants and hotels in Ireland have started turning US visitors away. Aww. When I was I told you this many, many times. When I was a teenager, late teens, when I left school, going to third level, I used to spend my summers as a tour guide at Waterford Crystal, where busloads of Americans, rotund Americans, would get off the buses and come looking to see how Waterford Crystal was made. And they were the nicest people you could ever meet in your life. They were amazed, and they went around in wonder. They were thrilled to be in Waterford, looking at the wonderful Waterford Crystal, which is not there anymore in the way it used to be, and they loved it. And I never met a single American that didn't have an ancestor from the old country. Lovely, lovely people. It was one of the most joyous things I ever did in my life. But they're being turned away now. Fucking Ireland, eh? Eh? And here's the story that we're going to get into. And it's about the very creepy dystopian times we are entering now. This is in the Sunday Times. Tim Shipman and Rosamund Orwin. App. That's an application for your phone or your tablet. App and 12-week diet to aid weight loss. Ministers will tell people to use an officially endorsed smartphone app. Jesus Christ, Richie. Ministers will tell people to use an officially endorsed smartphone app to lose weight as part of a drive to tackle obesity that will be launched this week. An app given to you by the government. An app that will monitor your physical activity. An app where you will upload to it, where you will input to it details of what you are eating and what you are drinking. Nothing sinister about that at all, right? This is going to be introduced, it's going to be announced by Johnson this week. And one of the crazy, crazy, crazy things about this, Boris Johnson will announce, wait for it, that GPs, general practitioners now, will prescribe cycling for patients. Your GP now is going to issue a prescription for cycling, as he or she would issue a prescription for diazepam or for painkillers or for a salbutamol inhaler. What happens when you don't go out cycling? This is the question, you see. This is the $64 million question. This now is tyranny that, again, for most of us, even those of us who've been looking into this thing for some years, we're aghast at what's going on. GPs telling you, handing you a prescription for cycling. An application downloaded to your phone which will monitor your physical activity. Keep that in mind. Professor Jonathan Valabji is National Clinical Director for Diabetes and Obesity at NHS England. And here he is speaking this morning to BBC Breakfast. Have a listen to him.
Two-thirds of the population in the overweight or obese range.
Two-thirds of the UK now are in the overweight or the obese range, right?
That is important for a whole host of things. We know that obesity in the long term predisposes to type 2 diabetes and heart attacks and strokes and arthritis and a whole host of things. But we now know that even in the short term, there are important consequences. And we know that people who are overweight or obese are at significantly higher risk of realizing the more severe outcomes of COVID. So there's a real opportunity, a moment, if you like, where I think people are receptive to additional measures. And so I think the fact that the government is prepared to announce a package of a host of different manoeuvres to help the situation is really positive for us in the NHS as well, of course.
You know. Let's just pause there. Prepare yourself for what he says next. This is where it's going, you see. It's important that we understand where this is going. You have an app where the government tells you what to do that you've got to keep fit. You're being told that if you're unwell, if you're overweight, if you're out of shape, you are more likely to become ill with COVID. This is bullshit anyway, right? Okay. But listen carefully to what he says next.
Manoeuvres to help the situation is really positive. Really positive for us in the NHS.
Really positive for us in the NHS. Why?
Yes, as well, of course. You know, the consequences of obesity, such as type 2 diabetes, consume, you know, a lot of resources within the NHS.
Yeah. And the truth shall set you free. Because you're obese, you already consume resources in the NHS. Now, because you're obese, you're likely to get COVID and you're likely to pass it on. And you're taking up a lot of valuable time in the NHS. You've got to lose weight. You've got to become healthier. And if you don't, in the near future, and this is not melodrama, this is not fear porn. If you fucking don't, you will be denied access to health services. Not all health services, but to the sorts of what they might call non-essential treatments. Surgery. On a hip, maybe, that's gone a bit wonky. On a knee, that's gone a bit wonky. Well, your GP diagnosed cycling for you and you ignored it. You're a fat bastard. And you didn't do what you were told and you put other people at risk. So you're going to have to live with the pain in your knee. And I can only give you some painkillers on the NHS free. You'll have to pay for others. This is where it is going. You won't be treated. Self-inflicted. Bad habits. Social crediting. Now, I'm not doing this to piss you off, but you have to listen to it. Tony Blair. War criminal. Evil psychopath. Should be hanging from his ankles from the Tower of London. While Iraqi widows and widowers, I've said this before, I'll say it again, line up to take an open piss into his mouth. Tony Blair, yes. One of the worst human beings that ever lived. They're dragging him out a lot lately to push this COVID bullshit, to push the tracking and testing. 500,000 tests a day they want for a virus that's pretty much gone. The government says it'll happen. Here's Tony Blair with Sophie Ridge this morning.
We're doing infinitely better than we were. We're testing many, many more people, but I still don't think we've got the right strategy in place for what I would call mass testing. And, you know, if you think our capacity is 300,000 tests a day, we're probably only utilising on our calculations around about half of that. We'll soon have 500,000 tests a day capacity. We should be using all of it, and that means extending greatly the numbers of people who've got access to tests and using the data and local communities much more effectively in doing it. And the reason why I still think we're short of where we need to be is that I think if you analyse what we know about this disease now and look at the global data, the reality is we're going to be living with COVID-19. We're not going to be eliminating it.
What, forever?
Well, for the foreseeable future. For enough of the future, that means that it's worth putting in place the containment infrastructure that allows you to control it. Because the problem is that if you just look in the last few days, okay, you've had surges of cases in Poland, Australia, Romania, Israel, Argentina, you know, several other countries. So there's a pattern developing, which is that people go into lockdown, they ease the lockdown, but then there are significant spikes. And we're still in the summer months when it's frankly easier to deal with the disease.
So do you anticipate a significant spike here as we leave lockdown?
There is a possibility you end up with a resurgence in the autumn. Now, it may not happen, but you've got to hope for the best and plan for the worst.
Hope for the best, plan for the worst. The reason Blair is on is to prostitute himself for mask wearing. Tony is anybody's if you have enough money. And I'm sure he was paid good money, not by Sky News, but by the psychopaths that he works for to start pushing the mask this week. Blair is on to whore himself for mask wearing.
There are certain things that are just obvious when you look at them. And the evidence on masks, by the way, is absolutely clear globally. There's no doubt they help control the disease.
Horse shit, and she should jump in again, Ridge. But Ridge is so bad, it's untrue. I've seen some bad presenters over the years. I've worked with some bad presenters. And way back, I fired a bad presenter. This is dreadful, not to jump in. There is no clear, concise evidence to demonstrate the rationale for using masks. All the evidence says that masks are useless, including the World Health Organization's own advice back in March. But she just sits there.
If you look at the countries that have used masks extensively, and not just the Asian countries where it's more of the normal culture, but take a country like Austria, where they've used masks extensively, there's no doubt they've been able better to control the disease. And it's all about controlling it. Because if you think that you can't really go back into lockdown as we were in say, March and April, and I think it's just unrealistic to think we're going to be able to do that.
Why not?
Because I think the economic consequences, even from the lockdown we've had, are so severe. If you go back into another lockdown, I mean, I'm already, you know, horrified by the potential economic damage, even from the lockdown we've done and the loss of confidence. You go back into another big lockdown, no, I think it would be devastating for the economy. So I think, put it like this, you can't rule out doing it, but...
Yeah, you can't rule out lockdown. He's building up to something here that's pretty, well, startling. Wait till you hear
it. But it's going to have to be a terrible situation. So the likelihood is that...
The likelihood now? He's going to talk about the workplace.
You're going to have spikes, you might have a resurgence, and you're going to have to control it, because you won't be able to go back into the kind of nuclear option of lockdown. So if that's the case, just prepare now. Use the month of August and September to put in place the best infrastructure you possibly can. So, for example...
Wait for this.
Employers, you know, already many employers and a lot of people in the occupational health management companies are helping employers test their employees. Because if you're going back into the workspace, you'd like to know what the disease status is of the people that you're working with. We should be making this much more widely available. We should be coordinating it. You've got to mobilise local communities.
Yeah, listen again.
Employers, you know, already many employers and a lot of people in the occupational health management companies are helping employers test their employees.
Helping employers to test their employees.
Because if you're going back into the workspace...
If you go back to the workspace...
You'd like to know what the disease status is of the people that you're working with.
You'd like to know the disease status of the people you are working with. This is the health passport. It really is. The world that they're shaping in front of our eyes is fucking horrifying. I put a rather ranty post on Facebook yesterday. I didn't proofread it. It probably doesn't read that well. It was as I was about to run out the door to get out of the house for the afternoon with my beloveds. And later on, I saw there was some blowback. Some people said it's never going to get as bad as that. It is going to get as bad as that. Of course it is. Employers and pretty much everybody else has the right to know what your disease status is. Says Tony Blair, the man responsible for murdering over 1.5 million men, women and children and rendering homeless about 3 to 4 million more. Rolling out the agenda. Plain to see. We should know your disease status. Listen, let's leave on a semi-positive note. It's semi-positive, but it's equally depressing as well. This afternoon at Lord's Cricket Ground, it's the thing that my friends in Ireland, whom have known me since I was very, very, very young, drives them mad. It drives them mad that I like cricket. I discovered cricket in the summer of 2005, living in Manchester the first time before we moved to Spain. And I love it. I love Test cricket. I don't like cricket. I love it. And watching West Indies, of course, and England at the moment, which is going on a mile away from here to an empty Old Trafford cricket stadium. It's shocking. But this afternoon at Lord's Cricket Ground, I saw an Indian once for day at the Oval. Yeah, at Lord's. At Lord's Cricket Ground, they are allowing 1,000 fans in. Fans are slowly but surely, allegedly, returning to cricket grounds. Here's Katie Shanahan from the BBC at Lord's this morning.
Yes, well, Kat, this is a massive day for sport. I'm down here at the Oval as we're expecting to see 1,000 fans coming back, welcoming fans back into grounds for the first time in England since March. So as you can see, the covers are coming off as in a couple of hours, 1,000 fans will be taking their seats to watch this county cricket match between Surrey and Middlesex. It's the first of a number of trials that the government are putting on to try and get fans back into stadiums, but it's going to look different. There's going to be 1,000 fans compared to the 25,000.
25,000 could be there, but we're going to let 1,000 in.
1,000 capacity. They're only using this one stand, and fans are going to have to make sure they're socially distant.
Wait till you hear this. Fans, wait till you hear the measures fans have to employ in order to be safe outdoors at Lord's.
At all times. with separate households sitting in every other row.
Separate households sitting in every other row.
Plus keeping two seats free, either side of them as well. Oh. Face masks are also optional, with hand sanitizer stations dotted around the ground. But the good news...
Hand sanitizers dotted around the ground. Bowled him! Middle stomped out of the ground! Did you see that, Richie? No, I was washing me fucking hands.
...is... The bars are open, the food is available, the PA system is going to be going, and the big
yes.
screens are going to be on. As if these trials work and there are positive signs towards the government, then hopefully we can start to get more fans back into ground. So there's a real sense of excitement here.
Real sense of excitement, real sense of fucking madness, Katie Shanahan, to be honest. Dear listener, we've come to the end of Sunday View. Have a lovely Sunday. Do join me tomorrow. John Waters, who will be in Sligo tomorrow, has agreed to drop in on our programme for an hour. Just a lovely Irish journalist of great reputation, great skill and great achievement, and author as well. John Waters joins me tomorrow. I hope this hasn't been too much of a pain in the arse this morning. A lot of very, very newsy, but there you are. It's a bit newsy this morning. Before I go, I put an appeal out for funding on Friday, something I don't ordinarily do. Because obviously big drop in funding over the COVID thing, which I totally understand. You heard me loud and clear, and the programme raised over the last few days nearly £1,200, which is very, very, very good and very helpful. So to everybody who made a contribution over the weekend, thank you very much for your support. Don't ever call it a donation, please. It ain't a donation. I'm not a charity. I work like a dog to put this show together. It is support and it is greatly appreciated. And I have thanked some people, and over the next week or so, I will thank people as well. If you haven't heard from me and you think, what an ignorant bastard, he couldn't even say thanks, email me. Probably went to your spam, or maybe it didn't reach you. I will thank you in person if you want me to do that. So thank you. It was much needed. And it's a bit of a load off my shoulder, it must be said. So thank you so much for doing that. I might not sound like I appreciate it, because I can be a bit, you know, I don't know, full on. But I really do. It sometimes moves me to being very emotional, the fact that you would think it worth supporting. So you heard me on Friday, and I'm so glad that you did. Thank you very much. Have a fantastic Sunday. John Waters tomorrow. I really love you. You have to know that. Speak tomorrow. Look after yourselves and one another. John Denver, this is beautiful. You fill up my senses.